Welcome to the Rotary Voices Podcast Holiday Special. I'm JP Swenson. In this episode, Santa Claus is coming to town. There has long been suspicion that the legendary Santa Claus is a Rotarian. Chris Offer, a member of the Rotary Club of Ladner in Canada, and former policeman with a degree in criminology, says he has embarked on a truth-finding mission.
After sleuthing around, he released his findings in a recent online post.
The answer is unequivocally yes. Santa is dedicated to improving the lives of children. He is committed to bringing happiness to children around the world, no matter what race, religion, creed, or ethnic group they're from.
According to Offer, Santa's work falls into Rotary's area of focus, distributing tens of thousands of books to children and giving gifts of toys that stimulate young minds to help them achieve their full potential. He volunteers as a mentor, spending countless hours at shopping malls, gathering children's wishes. Santa, without question, works to realize the object of Rotary. In other words, Offer concludes that,
yes, Santa Claus is a Rotarian.
In fact, Offer checked the Rotary International website and located a club for Santa, the Rotary Club of North Pole in District 5010, in Alaska near Fairbanks. Since Santa has a busy travel schedule, Offer suggests that Santa join an e-club or a companion club. As for classification, Offer lists Santa as a toys exporter, reindeer teamster, and a counselor for pre-adolescents. Offer is confident that Santa has full meeting attendance and will never miss a Rotary lunch.
I just hope he doesn't make up at my club this year.
We could not agree more. Believe it or not, Rotary Magazine has tried to track down Rotarian Santa for some time. Santa is truly omnipresent in the Rotary world. We've seen videos and photos of him leading the annual Rotary Santa Run in Arlington Heights, Illinois, and in Evansville, Indiana. In the city of Thunder Bay, Canada, the Rotary Santa Claus Parade attracts 20,000 spectators each year. At the end of the parade, Rotarian Santa and Mrs. Claus greet the children with gifts.
Santa's close affiliation with Rotary has prompted us to devote this whole episode to Santa the Rotarian. In this episode, Santa does reveal some of his magical secrets, and he wanted us to let you know that children are strictly forbidden to listen. To keep your child off the naughty list, make sure they aren't present for the rest of the episode. We first caught up with Santa in Rovaniemi, which is the capital of Lapland in northern Finland. It's also the official hometown of Santa Claus.
Lapland in northern Finland has been associated with the home of Santa Claus since 1927, when a local radio host claimed that Santa Claus lived on Korvatunturi, a mountain in the region. At the end of World War II, Lapland was ravaged by the retreating German army. Rovaniemi, the capital of Lapland, was almost wiped out by bombs and fire. At that time, Eleanor Roosevelt, the widow of President Franklin D. Roosevelt, was heading the UN Commission on Human Rights. In the summer of 1950, the former First Lady wanted to see the midnight sun at the Arctic Circle. She decided to visit Rovaniemi. To accommodate her visit, locals scrambled to build a cottage. Thus, in June 1950, two planes carrying Mrs. Roosevelt and thousands of tons of aid arrived. The aid was critical to Lapland because the region was suffering badly. More importantly, Mrs. Roosevelt's visit turned Lapland into a popular tourist destination. Subsequently, Rovaniemi staked a claim as Santa's official hometown and developed the Santa Claus Village. As one would expect, there is a Rotary Club in the Santa Claus Village. It's called Rovaniemi Santa Claus Rotary Club. Raimo Leitinen, a club member, claims there is only one Santa Claus in Lapland, and it's him. We first heard about Leitinen last October from Yulia Pavichenko, who was then the president of the Rotary Club of Kharkiv-Nadia in Ukraine. Her club had partnered with the Rotary Club of Rovaniemi Santa Claus and clubs in other parts of Europe to sponsor a Santa Spectacular for children who were traumatized by the ongoing war in Ukraine. Leitinen, the authentic Santa Claus from Lapland, dropped in on multiple Ukrainian cities and visited children, including orphans and those displaced from their homes. The story caught our attention, so we reached out to Lightning.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you great.
Yeah, all right.
He first learned about Rotary after he attended a Rotary conference in Hamburg, Germany, 5 years ago. The experience stayed with him, and after he moved back to Rovaniemi, he joined the Rotary Club there. Lightning was born in Rovaniemi. His family owned a shop there.
We are selling clothes for children and adults. I was a young boy and working also there.
In college, he studied economics in the Finnish capital of Helsinki and became an economist. After returning to Rovaniemi, he took over the family business, eventually going on to work for the Minister of Trade and Industry in Finland. So where does Santa come into play? Well, Lightning was actually just a young scout boy when he became a scout Santa Claus. Then he started playing football.
First, I think that I want to be a professional football player. And that's why I was also Santa Claus for our Rovaniemi football club.
So what made Lightning want to become Santa? Well, it's in his blood. He says his father was a Santa Claus too.
Very long history. His father was Santa Claus and his grandfather and so on and so.
Growing up, he learned the job of being a Santa by watching, and his children are doing the same.
He is my elf now, and my elves are coming. They are sisters and brothers, and everybody is working for Santa Claus.
As one expects, before Christmas, everyone in Lapland is working hard to get things ready for the big day.
Lapland is a very, very special place. We have all four seasons really very different. You can go on the riverside or lakeside, lay down and look on the sky, and there you can see northern lights, sky, moonlight, and it is very nice. Also, this big silence in Lapland, it is so that you can even hear what you are thinking yourself. Christmas time is our high season. That time many people are visiting in Lapland, and we have very much snow. Sometimes we have very cold, 48 degrees cold, and it is dark time.
Despite the cold weather, Santa Claus and Mrs. Claus take a swim every day.
Every day, very early in the morning, we go to swim every day all around the year. Even winter time, we have hole on the ice. And when we wake up, we immediately go on the river and make our swimming there. Sometimes it can be 48 degrees cold, and then you go and swim. It is very good for your heart, very good for your brains.
Another fun fact about Lapland, there are actually more reindeer than people there.
Maximum amount of reindeers old time was 300,000 reindeers all over the Lapland.
The population of humans in Lapland is about 180,000. There was even an app in Finland to track and notify drivers of reindeer due to the number of reindeer-related accidents. Anyway, enough about Rudolph. Santa Claus, as you may expect, has traveled to some unique places, but there's one country he feels especially connected with, Ukraine.
Five times earlier, I visited in Ukraine, and it was so fantastic country. I love to be there. I visited this kind of school and kindergarten and hospital everywhere in Lviv, Kyiv, Kharkov and different places there. And everything was before the war. But then this time when this war started, and then I couldn't visit it there. And then I was thinking and speculating how I can help those children in Ukraine. And it was 19 May 22, Rotary President Yulia Pavitsenko from Kharkov visited in Rovaniemi in our club, and we make this kind of photo shooting video to children in Ukraine. And that time when Yulia get this video, we think, how about if I come to visit Ukraine during the wartime?
So Yulia and Raimo made Santa videos for the children in Ukraine, and they decided to have Raimo actually come to Ukraine. He was welcomed warmly by the kids.
And this time, it was so nice. They are making presentation for me. They write letters for me, and they also make paintings for me.
Laitinen came prepared with presentations for the children. In the evenings, he attended Rotary meetings and met with Ukrainian soldiers. But there was one day when Laitinen was told he could not present. The air sirens went off.
And it was this time when there is coming terrible racket and everywhere, so that people are not safe. We are planning to make this kind of presentation out of the doors, but I couldn't make it because it is not safe for people, and then they cancel.
He says the children were devastated that their meeting with Santa had been canceled.
They were so sorry, and they were crying, and they were saying that how it can be so that all nice, this terrible war take away.
Laitinen was in a bomb shelter when he heard about the kids' reactions.
I was in my shelter, and people are coming from this hospital and ask me, oh, Santa Claus, children give greetings to you, and they were so sorry that you couldn't come to meet them. And I say that, okay, how it is now?
He asked if it was finally safe for him to travel to the children to make his presentation.
Then they ask me that, are you afraid to come to make presentation? And then I say, Finnish Santa Claus is never afraid, never. And then they look me and say, if it is possible, we can make it. And I say, okay, we make it. And then 1 o'clock, I make my presentation for children. And it was very fantastic presentation for everybody. Children are so close, and they make so good program for me, singing and painting and letters and everything. And there was so nice.
Laitinen told us about some of the requests he received from the children of Ukraine.
They come to say to me, my dear Santa Claus, can you do something for this terrible war? Maybe you can negotiate for Mr. Putin in Russia that they stop the war. And I say, of course we try, and they want peace next Christmas for them. Everybody has their wishes, and everybody has their hopes. And that's why it is very important for me. And for example, now they say in Ukraine that Finnish Santa Claus is the bravest Santa Claus in the world. And it was so nice to hear this. I feel that we succeeded to make something very nice for children. And I think that they get something in their heart and their mind. And that's why I'm so happy we managed to do it. That time I was so happy to meet Rotarian, those volunteer people who are working every day from morning to evening and organize those things for soldiers, hospital, and everywhere.
When Laitinen returned home, he reflected on what he witnessed in Ukraine.
They have nothing. No water, no electricity, no warming. And all the time it is very dangerous to go outside or somewhere because there is bombers everywhere and so on and so on. And now I think that people understand how important it is that everybody can help Ukraine.
And Laitinen continues to help Santa connect with the children in Ukraine from Finland.
In Finland, almost every day we make something for Ukraine. And especially, I'm lucky, I can make many things. I can make video greetings for them. And I have this kind of WhatsApp meeting with them every week. I have in Kharkov, this club, they invite me to discuss with them. And we try to give money. We try to give everything what they most need. And all the time, something is going there. And Mr. Lordi and I, we make concert together last March in Rovaniemi, and we are together collecting things what they need, and it start very big movement between people here in Rovaniemi and also in Finland.
Thanks to Raimo Laitinen for joining us. Up next, we meet another Santa by the name of Bruce Templeton. In 2014, Templeton was inducted into the International Santa Claus Hall of Fame. Up in St. John's, Newfoundland and Labrador, he spends his Decembers visiting children in hospitals, the elderly in senior homes, and starring in the city's annual Christmas parade. But this wasn't always his life. In fact, he used to be the regional manager of a retail chain, while assisting the company in opening nearly 100 stores in North America. He had a realization while Christmas shopping in Toronto. Here's Steve Edwards interviewing Rotarian Bruce Templeton of St. John's, Newfoundland and Labrador.
I believe the year was 1977. And you tell a story about riding the subway in Toronto, and you have a revelation about what was happening with you personally and the amount of time you were spending with your family. What was that moment? What was that memory that triggered a pivot for you?
I started to question then, as I kissed my wife goodbye every Sunday afternoon and came home on Friday nights, I started to question whether success in life and success in business are two different things. So that's what caused me to go into a shop, Eddie Bauer's in Toronto. I bought a shirt, and I was sitting on the subway, and I looked at the bag, and the bag had written on it, "Never confuse having a career with having a life." And that was what caused me to say, "I've had enough of this." So I sat with my wife, and we decided to come back to Newfoundland.
When you returned to Newfoundland and Labrador, you, at one point in time, have an encounter, as I understand it, with somebody who set you on the path of helping Santa over the years.
Well, we got back to Newfoundland in 1978. I had to figure out what kind of career was I going to follow. In 1978, my aunt came to me and said, would I play Santa at a church function? And my aunt was a pretty determined lady. You didn't say no to my aunt. But I went to various stores, Canadian Tire and whatever. I came home with flannelette and cotton wool, and I called her and said, sorry, Aunt Anna, I can't do it. So she said, why? And I said, I have an image of what this should look like, and the bar is very high. So she said to me, well, if I make it, will you do it? So what came to my house was gorgeous velvet, lamb's wool, prescription glasses, gauntlets from the RCMP, big white gauntlets. Santa was absolute perfection. And so when I put on that suit for the first time, and when I went and saw the joy in the eyes of the children, I realized that this filthy capitalist of a stockbroker that I was, the Santa journey was 180 degrees. It was completely opposite to my days as a stockbroker and a capitalist, buying and selling stocks on the New York Stock Exchange.
For those who don't know who St. Nicholas of Myra is, tell us a bit more about him and why he's so important to our understanding of what we all now more commonly know as this character, Santa Claus.
He was an orphan at 8 years old. Parents both died. He went to live in a monastery. He had a lot of money. And he felt guilty about 8, 9, 10 years old. He didn't know what to do with the money. So he asked Bishop Philip, who we lived with, what should I do with this? And the monastery people said, give it away. So Nicholas heard about a man who had three daughters that had no money. So Nicholas went out for a walk, and he walked down the street. He looked in, and he saw there were three stockings hanging by a fire, drying, and he reached in his pocket. He put three gold coins in the stockings that were drying by the fire, and that was the beginning of this. That is the St. Nicholas story.
How do you think about who Santa Claus is today in a world that is diverse and filled with people of all different backgrounds and faith traditions?
There was a letter once that Santa received, and a letter was something that I never, ever forgot. And the letter was written by a little girl. And she said, Santa, will you ask my mommy to give me her presents? And when I looked down, she spelled it P-R-E-S-E-N-C-E. Will you ask my mommy to give me her presents? Now, let's think about that. As we're running to catch subways, as we're scurrying to buy gifts, the child only wants her mother to be present. So what is the meaning of all this then? The only thing that a child is going to remember, the only thing that any of you remember, do you remember anything at all you got under a tree? I don't. You do remember perhaps going sliding, going skating when your parents took you somewhere as a family. So it's your presence, not presence, that counts at Christmas time. So that's the message. So, for example, Robert L. May was bullied in school. He used to cry himself to sleep reading The Ugly Duckling. So Robert L. May wrote a little story about Rudolph. He was a little reindeer with a red nose. And I say to the children in the schools, you've got Rudolphs here. In this school, there's 600 kids. There's kids here from all over the world. And there are children that are different. And a teacher touched me on the arm 2 years ago, said, you have no idea what you just did in there. There's a child that's transgender. And you've been a huge influence in that child's life. Because all I ask is that the child be loved. I ask the children to love and appreciate those that are different, because that's all they want in life. Another area for me that has a profound impact is not just children. Santa visits seniors' homes. And one year, Santa went to this dear old lady and said, ma'am, what would you like for Christmas? And she scowled, why do they treat me like a child in here? Christmas is for children. Go away, Santa Claus. And I said, ma'am, there must be something that would make your Christmas a little brighter. And she said, would you please tell my children where I am? Would you please tell my children that I love them? So these are the experiences for Santa that have caused me to be very strong in my belief that it's your presence, not presence, that counts. And that's something that I'd like everybody to think about.
What mindset do you want to get into as you are helping Santa Claus, as you put it?
My daughter here is a pediatric cardiologist. And for 40 years, we go to the children's hospital on Christmas Eve. You start off, you go in at 8 o'clock. So you go pediatric intensive care, you go to the neonatal unit, you go to the emergency unit. And one year when we got to a door, they said, you have to go through the door alone, Santa. The child inside is there, is dying, and the parents are there, but the child has an infectious disease and we can't go with you. So that was the night that I put my head down and I had a little prayer outside the door. And I said, St. Nicholas, go and prepare the way for me that I will not be alone when I go through the door. So that for me was my transition from Santa to St. Nicholas. I went into the room. I carry with me the St. Nicholas prayer for children. We pray for peace and freedom from pain. And we had a lovely, prayerful time with the family. The lady had taken a pair of white angel wings and put them on her daughter's back. And she said, Santa, will you kiss my daughter on the back of her head to start her on her journey? And then 3 days later, the call came from the hospital to say, will you come and get a letter here for you? And when I went, the photograph of Santa with her daughter was there. And the lady said, I have a message for you. My daughter and I have gone home. My daughter started to get better the minute you said the prayer for my daughter. So that little girl, she did live another 4 years. I did go to a funeral. I go to the funerals of all the kids that have passed away. And I've had 11 children that Santa held them at Christmas time, and they passed away sometime in the year or years afterwards.
One of the children that you connected with over the years was a visit with a young boy named Richard. And you asked your daughter, Christina, as I understand it, if she thinks that the visits you make are still worth it after all these years. And she sent you an email. I'm happy to read it, but I wonder if you might tell us a bit about Richard's story and what you draw from that experience about whether it's worth it.
An hour before in the hospital, we'd gone into the room and met a little boy named Richard. His mother and grandmother were there, and they said, would you mind, Richard just fell asleep waiting for you to come. Do you mind if we take a picture so that we can prove to him in the morning that you actually did come? The little boy had had a brain tumor, and I turned to my daughter, Christina, and I said, Christina, we've been at this for a long time. Do you really think it's worth it? That caused Christina to send me the email that she did.
The email that Christina sent you said, if he lives, his family will show him the picture and tell him the story over and over for years about Santa coming that night. If he dies, they will remember him this way for the rest of their own lives. Either way, it was worth it.
That's right. Let me tell you the story then of the little boy at the John Howard Society. So the John Howard Society asks Santa to come every year. Santa will go again this year. And for 5 or 6 years, there was one little boy who would meet Santa at the door. He'd latch his arms around Santa's leg. The little boy's dad was in jail. And I believe very strongly that a child does not get to choose the family into which it is born. All you can do as a child is deal with the reality of where you are. So one year when I went, the little guy at that point was probably 12, 13 years old, and he wasn't there. And I said to my colleagues, where's my little friend? And they said, you'll read about it in the newspaper tomorrow. So I opened the paper to page 3, and it said, 13-year-old steals an ambulance from the hospital and has been arrested by the police. So I called the police and I said, where's the little guy? And they said, sorry, sir, he's a minor. We won't tell you. And I called Child Youth and Family Services and they said, sorry, sir, we won't tell you. I called everywhere to try and find where was that little boy. So the John Howard Society finally said, we'll break a few rules here. Stand by your phone. So the Youth Center for Impaired Children called to say, we understand you're trying to find a little boy. And they said, Santa, if you come at 4 o'clock tomorrow afternoon and let you come in and see him. So we went to this center for troubled youth. We went through 3 sets of locked doors. Santa rang his bells and the little boy ran and jumped, and he jumped and wrapped his arms around Santa's neck. And he said, you found me, you found me, you found me. I was so afraid you wouldn't find me. So we stayed pretty close to that little guy over the years. We arranged to send him to hockey school. We bought him goalie pads. He's a straightened out, perfectly great little guy. And I predict one of these years he'll be the Prime Minister of Canada.
I'm curious to talk a little bit about the fun of it all and the pageantry of it all. So every December for you begins with the Santa Claus parade. So, Bruce, tell us, what does that event mean and entail for Santa?
Well, first of all, I did it for this is year 45 for me. So there were things that I brought to the parade. For example, I thought it'd be really neat if we had a helicopter. So then I thought it would be really neat if we built on the back of the sleigh a landing platform.
Hold on a second. You're talking a real helicopter here.
Exactly. A Bell Jet Ranger helicopter. with the door off the helicopter so Santa could wave out the door. So then why can't we land the helicopter on the back of the sleigh? We'll fold back the props. We'll go up the main street and outside City Hall. Santa will get out of the sleigh. He'll climb up into his helicopter. He'll wave goodbye and he'll go back to the North Pole. Another example was that there was one year a little boy arrived home to say he's a fake. The children, my buddies in school, think he's just an old man. Santa doesn't exist. So the mother came and said to the children, we're going to have a pizza party. You're going to write a letter to the North Pole. And she went and she bought a pin, a little Santa pin. So the kids wrote the letter, dear Santa, we think you're fake. However, we're going to give you one last chance. Enclosed is a pin. And if next year in November at the Santa Claus parade, if you've got this pin in your hat, we will know you are real. So the mother, they sealed the envelope. They took it down to the post box and mailed it. The mother came in to me 2 weeks before the parade. She brought the second pin that she had bought. And she said, would you please put this on the right side of your hat? So I said, where are you going to be in the parade? She said, outside the convenience store. I said, name the four kids. And my wife wrote them in a book. When the sleigh got outside the convenience store, Santa looked down and said, Steve, JP, Yusu, look. Santa got your letter. Here's the pin. So the children's jaws dropped and hit the sidewalk. They couldn't believe that their letter had gone to the North Pole. So it is the fact that one year I looked down and I thought there's 30,000 people here and 30,000 afterward were down on the lower street. There's 60,000 people here. Why don't we have a food drive? So I called the utility company and the power company, and they said we'd be thrilled to do that next year. Everyone who came to the parade was asked to bring a non-perishable food item, and we collect 20 tons of food for the parade, right? So these are not difficult things to do, but these are some of the joys that come from when I arrange for Santa to come. These are some of the things that come with him.
Bruce, in addition to the work you do as you welcome Santa Claus into the world, you're also very active and have been a longtime member of the Rotary Club of St. John's in Newfoundland and Labrador. What's the Rotary Club connection to any of the Santa Claus world that you have described so powerfully to us?
Well, I grew up here in Newfoundland, an island, and a number of my friends coming through had polio. So as I started to learn that a number of years ago, there were 145 countries in the world where one could get polio. And then as I learned that there was a Newfoundlander, Dr. Bruce Aylward, at the World Health Organization in Geneva, and he would come home to see his parents, and I would meet with him, and I learned more and more about polio. And then I learned that we were down to five countries, PAIN, Pakistan, India, Afghanistan, and Nigeria. So all of my Santa money from my books has gone through to Chicago. I'm grateful that we've had the double match. And I don't exactly know the number now, but we bought somewhere through the efforts of my and the support of others. Well, I've bought vaccine for something over 500,000 children now. And I think that, and that work will continue. We'll do it again this year.
It's remarkable work and remarkable impact. What would you like for us to understand about what the holiday spirit might mean, regardless of one's belief system and country or culture of origin?
I believe that kindness must be a universal virtue. The virtue of kindness, where you simply do a random act of kindness for somebody. It's not a difficult thing to do. It just sends a message that I care. So it comes back to my belief that it's your presence, not presence, that counts. And that is all I would ask everybody to do, is do a random act of kindness with no expectation of return and pass it on to others.
Thanks so much to Bruce Templeton and Raimo Leittinen for sharing your stories with us. Don't forget to rate and review this episode on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. If you want to donate to Rotary's work in Ukraine, visit my.rotary.org/donate and give to the Ukraine Response Fund. To support Bruce Templeton's work, visit maninthereadsuit.wordpress.com. To our listeners, we wish you all the best this holiday season. This episode of the Rotary Magazine podcast is produced by me, JP Swenson, and edited by Wen Huang, with production by Yusu Kim and Tim Kapp. Steve Edwards hosted our interview with Bruce Templeton. Rotary Magazine is the official monthly publication of Rotary International. Thanks for listening.